Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another fantastic night of Fandom Access. I am your ever faithful host, AJ. Greetings and salutations. Another big show tonight. We've got The Walking Dead as it limps to the finish line. We've got Manifest, which has returned from the abyss. We've got Interview with a Vampire. Can't think of anything catchy for that one. We've got Peripheral. We've got Quantum Leap. We've got Andor. And we have AHSNYC. So as soon as my cohorts get here, I guess both works. Oh, look, I have one. Good evening.
Hello, AJ, how are you?
Good.
Had a good week, I hope?
Yeah, as good as any other.
Great. I hear a little ding. Could be Jamie.
You heard a ding? I didn't hear a ding.
Yeah, it's a little text message that says, be there in a sec. So she'd be right with us. So we have a ton of stuff to talk about tonight. Again, right? And
yes.
We have so many shows.
Yes, we do.
Or like more than one episode. All these streaming shows that we got to do like two episodes a week.
It's funny about AHS. I mean, Manifest is one thing because, I mean, obviously all 10 dropped, but AHS is funny because they're actually released. It's still a regular show and they're dropping two every week, which kind of makes me wonder what their thought process. I mean, there's still two seasons to go. I mean, they're renewed through season 13. So it's kind of makes you wonder if FX was like, did we really want to renew this for two more years?
Well, especially, you know, they keep calling this a season like no other, and they've been hyping it like it was, such an amazing season, which would make me think you want to drag it out and get the ratings every week.
Yeah. To be fair, it's an anthology, so every season is like no other. So there is truth to it, technically.
Maybe they just wanted to get
Jamie.
It all done.
I thought at first you said Manifest. I was listening, and I'm like, they're not talking about Manifest.
No.
No.
Oh, hello.
So, hi, Jimmy. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm listening. I'm scratching my eye. My contact moved, but I'm listening. That's why I paused.
Oh, that's all right.
But we got a few things tonight. I looked up. I'm hopefully got the right... the right episode in my head for Peripheral. I looked it up, so hopefully I can remember which is which, because it's so confusing.
Okay, I watched it on Sunday, and I'm like, wait, what happened?
That's true. It's confusing to think what I thought.
So, I mean, I guess let's jump right into it, huh?
Oh, okay, yeah, we can do that.
Enjoy your Walking Dead.
Like, jump right into our Walking Dead.
Okay, that's what I thought.
So,
obviously, now this, I had talked to Medina for this one again, and that's up for about who plays Medina's, or who plays Negan's wife. She plays Annie. The more I thought about this episode, there's a lot, obviously, in this episode that kind of parallels what happened with Negan and Maggie and all that. I think a lot of times that we still complain, like you still can't forgive Negan for what he did, but they kind of are really pushing it in this episode, you know? That he didn't betray them. I can't say I was surprised. I'm like, there's no way he's betraying them. You know he's not going to. But I think that warden was kind of meant to kind of parallel what he was like, I guess. But I don't know that it followed through as well as maybe it could have, but I think that was kind of what they were going for.
Oh, I didn't really think that. I haven't even thought of that until you just mentioned it. That's interesting. I was kind of thinking person like every single person from the Commonwealth was a total jerk. And I was thinking, I don't know, I was thinking a lot like this is not a way to, I don't know, it's not a way to run the place. Like, what is the point of sending people there to do work and then, like, you're going to shoot them all? Like, is
I know,
a way
you need workers,
to,
right?
Well, yeah, you need workers.
Well, I don't think he thought that they'd all stand up. You know what I mean? I think
well,
that
but he says kill them all. He's going to kill them all.
No,
right?
No, no.
And
but
willing...
I mean, I think his original plan, I don't think he thought they would, is what I'm saying. But then, like, he kind of had to follow through or nobody would be scared of him. And that's kind of where I think, like, his cruelty and his, like, I think is sort of paralleling the way Negan ran things. And I said, I don't think it came through maybe quite as well as they had hoped. But uh-huh. I kind of feel like, especially after talking to her, too, when she was saying how, like, that guy was, you know, had to run things kind of like he did and that he was doing his job. But it's like, it's all through fear. You know what I mean? But this time Negan, like, kind of sees that. And I think that's why I'm assuming why they showed, like, all those flashbacks at the beginning of the episode of him, you know, well, they didn't actually show it, but when he killed Glenn in that, because it's like, this guy's trying to scare people and is, like I said, kind of running it through fear. But I guess the point of it is to show that Negan changed and that he's willing to, you know, to die for her and that he's willing to risk his life for them. And that I don't know that I completely buy it just because, I mean, I buy it, but I still can't forgive him. Let's put it that way. It's not that I don't believe that he would do what he did, because I do believe he loves Annie. I also believe that he knows they have no way of getting out of there if, you know, Ezekiel and the other ones get killed, because they're not going to listen to him. And I think that so I can't say it's all for altruistic reasons that he did what he did. Like, not, I mean, maybe for her, but I mean, it's not like just to save them is what I'm saying. Like, I don't think it was necessarily about the other people, but I think that it's to show that he's definitely changed. And, I mean, I like how they did it, and I like how everybody stood up. I mean, it was a little, you know, do I believe all those people would have stood up and risked their lives for him, even if Ezekiel did that? No, but I liked the way they played out, the way it played out, and it was kind of like a good, like, I don't know the way I want to describe it, but, like, a positive, you know, they care about each other. Like, I like how it went down. And then I think the fact that Daryl just kind of popped up and stabbed them in the middle of it was even better, because it just cut the whole thing off. But, you know, obviously the other guys didn't agree with him, and that one was going to shoot him. I assume that they did not, that Daryl and them did not kill them, because they were going to, it seemed like we're going to let them go or wanted to let them go, but we're obviously being controlled by that guy as well. But I don't know. I think it just shows that people are a lot of times, like these soldiers, they're not all bad. They're doing what they're being forced to do because they're scared too. Doesn't make it okay. But I don't think everybody in the Commonwealth is bad. And I think it's before, like, how we talked about, what character was it? Maybe it was even Negan when we had this conversation. I think it was Negan where I said before that, like, there's so many of them and one of him. And, like, if just one person had stood up with a gun and, like, shot at him or pointed it at him, like, probably the other people could have followed. But you need that person that's kind of, like, willing to go against them and not be scared. And I feel like Pamela kind of has that same authority, you know? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I don't know. I thought this was really not that great an episode. I mean, so it was an okay episode. I thought it was an okay episode. I think this back of the season is just really not that good. And overall, I think it's not, like, that good an ending for The Walking Dead. I think we just, when you have a season finale that's been a series finale that's been planned for so long, I think they could have planned something really bigger and more interesting. I think that the Commonwealth storyline from the comic books is just not really working as like a super, super
not
ending.
Not as an ending. Yeah, it's
yeah.
not that it wouldn't work if there was another season, but because it's the ending, like, we want something big and explosive and, you know, like a big, you know, fight or something. And it's just not... It's not as exciting. I don't know.
Well, I think it's not that good. I think this episode was robbed of its drama because you know Negan's not going to die. Like, there's no suspense at all in whether
yeah.
or not Negan's going to betray them, what Negan's going to do, is Negan going to give his life for Annie's life. Like, you just know it's not going to happen. You know he goes on to, like, have this show with Maggie. So, you know, he's definitely not going to betray the group again because, like, Maggie finds a way
exactly.
to go forward with him, right?
Yeah.
So I also think that this whole thing with his wife, Annie, I just don't see it. I just don't see, like, I think if they hadn't, like, had Negan be missing for all that time and then just suddenly, like, oh, he's married and he's having a baby and he's in love and it changes him, like, I just feel like that's not, it's unearned because it all happened off screen.
Yeah.
For a long time.
Yeah.
We barely know Annie. Like, how many episodes has she been in? How many lines has she had in the show? Like, it's not earned.
Yeah.
Right? It's totally on her.
No, yeah, I agree. And he's a big character, so she should have more importance in the story. You know, but, I mean, that's the writers. What are you going to do? But yeah, I agree with you. I mean, like I said, I didn't think that he was going to betray them. But that was kind of my point, though, is I think he was willing to risk his life for her because he loves her. And even if we didn't see that on screen, I can kind of buy that. But I don't think that he is standing up for the other people out of the goodness of his heart completely. Like, I think a lot of it's like he knows that if they die, she's going to die. You know what I mean? Like, he needs them to make the rebellion to get her out of there, because I think he knows that he has no chance of, you know, leading them at this point. And that was kind of that conversation that was good, that conversation he had last week with Ezekiel about
yeah, I mean,
that.
So, I mean, speaking of Ezekiel, that was another, like, weak moment for me this week also where, you know, he says, oh, I can't forgive you for what you've taken from me. And, you know, he goes back and he refers to Ben, who I'm like, I had forgot. I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, Henry had a brother. What happened to him? And, you know, he was like this kind of, I'm like, wow. Like, that's the.
Negan's people shot him, yeah.
Right. So Negan didn't even do it. Somebody else shot him, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, I vaguely remember from that scene, we had a call. I remember vaguely having a conversation about that years ago that it was because of those people running the making, I forget what they were giving to Negan, food or weapons or whatever, that it was because those people made decisions. It wasn't that he said that. They were the ones taking care of it.
Yeah,
so
I
don't even know in that instance that he should blame Negan, which is funny and ironic, but I'm not sure that that was even really his fault, at least from what I remember. So...
Well, I mean, it's his fault. I mean, if Negan
I mean directly. Enough that Ezekiel would be like, I can't forgive you for it. Like, yes, it was definitely his fault because of the way he ran things. But he did not kill that kid. He did not tell
that
guy.
He didn't personally kill him. But if Negan hadn't been running his organization.
Yeah, if Negan hadn't been Negan, it wouldn't have happened. But
I think
that.
Of all the things Negan has done, to have a five, six seasons ago that we have to kind of remember, I think was not really.
That was barely in it.
I feel like that wasn't really. Like, these are the weaknesses as we come to the end that, you know, they also, like, Pamela Milton is just not a frightening character to me. I feel like that warden was not, like, I kind of disagree about the parallel to Negan. I feel like he's exactly like that guy that they threw off the roof, of, like, in the beginning of the season, and he's exactly like Lance Hornsby, like, they're all horrible people at the Commonwealth.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not saying it worked. I think that's what they were after. Because there was even a quote, and I'm looking at this. This is on comicbook.com. There is a quote, and he'd even said that. Negan says, "I've known men like him my whole life. I used to be how I used to be him." And that's why I said I think they were going for that. I just don't think it came across, I guess.
Well, I mean,
it's not very
strong. I think Negan,
because you're right. It's just like every other villain in this show. It's not.
Well, and Negan was far worse. Like Jimmy, the warden is not forcing the women in the prison camp to have sex with him, as far as we know. And he's not, like, he's just doing his job
to be a jerk, right?
I mean, he's brutal, but that's why he was put in that job in the first place. Like, I wouldn't read more into that than just another red shirt bad guy that got killed. I don't think he even had a name. I think this business with the children, this business with the kids being taken, to me, is, like, also too little too late. Like, there's two episodes left, and they're trying to build up this big thing of find the kids that just started, like, two episodes. I just feel like the whole back end here is not leading to the kind of, like, big epic conclusion we wanted, and I can't believe they started adding these, like, other kind of zombies in the last couple of episodes. Like, that's the thing they should have been seeding into it now and then, I think, over a long period of time. And, like, you know, they put the guts on, and then Enid, is that her name? Falls. Or is Enid? Who? What? Alpha's daughter. What's her name, Alpha's daughter?
Oh, Lydia. Was that this episode?
Enid's from a different... Enid's that other girl that was killed years ago. Like, Lydia falls and she drops the knife, and then this other zombie happens to fall exactly where she fell and picks up the knife, and, like, zombies can pick up knives now, and I'm just like, this is a huge development that they decide to dump into the Walking Dead universe in the last, like four episodes of the entire series. Like, it bothers me. It bothers me. That it's not making more sense and not better thought out.
Yeah, I mean, they're just trying to set up the other shows. Like I said, I don't...
Are
I
they?
Think the smarter zombies... Well, I assume so, because of the whole thing about, you know, World Beyond and them acting like they changed. And I've said this before, I think the idea of smarter zombies is a good idea. It's just, it's putting it in now is not a good idea. And yes, there have, at the beginning of the show with Frank Darabont, there were threads of it. But you can't have threads of something and then get rid of it for 10 years and then bring it back. It doesn't work that way.
Yes,
we're
exactly,
not
Jamie.
But,
exactly.
I mean, it's kind of like, I kind of see their point of view, though, if they decided to do this for the new show. It's kind of like, how do you do it? If you know that this will make a better show, do you bring it in so it makes a better new show, at least, but piss people off? Or do you just not do it? You know what I mean? Like, I kind of see the dilemma if they haven't done it for 10 years. But they should have had a game plan. If they were going to have the show going on this long and they knew they were going to have spinoffs, they should have thought of this, like, a long time ago. It should have been.
They knew it at least since they wrote World Beyond, right? I mean, they – this is what Scott Gimple gets paid for, be the overlord of all the shows.
Before, they could have started doing it before, whatever it is, four episodes before the end of the show.
Yeah, I just feel like they're not the ending of the show is not giving me what I and you know, I mean, I've read the comic book, I know what happens. You and I have talked about it a couple weeks ago that killing Lance was kind of a waste because he's a way better villain than Pamela. Pamela's just like, I mean, she doesn't really give any. It's not like I feel like she's really smart politician who just wants to hold on to power and lies, and she doesn't really feel like. It doesn't, to me, the portrayal on the screen doesn't feel like a person who really could have kept control of Commonwealth for 10 years.
Do you think that it's more meant as kind of, I guess, I don't want to say this, like a parallel to kind of what has happened in the real world? Like, I kind of wonder if that's why they kind of have this big, bad government, you know what I mean? Like, they're more trying to say something that's not being said that's not working, you know what I mean, rather than trying to make a good villain.
Yeah.
But she's in the comic book, right?
I mean, I can't really say what year the Commonwealth storyline was introduced, but it's years old now, right? Like, Walking Dead, the comic ended it did end 2 years ago, the comic book. And the story, the Commonwealth storyline is the end of the comic. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't quite go this way, as we've discussed.
Well, the
but
comic
similar.
Book, though, has the big ending of Rick getting killed, though, too, right?
Yeah.
So I think, like,
yes.
for a comic book, it worked for the end, but because we don't have that, it's not kind of like this big explosive ending. Although, that's not to say somebody couldn't die. We don't know.
Well,
I just wonder
also,
if that took, maybe took a lot of it.
I mean, so much of the comic book throughout its entire run, and particularly in the later issues, really is Carl's coming of age, right? And stepping up
mm-hmm.
to, like, follow in Rick's footsteps. And so not only is Judith not really positioned for that, she's too young, but the children are completely, like, missing in, the, like, in these last episodes, right? Like, it's funny because you and I complain about kids on TV all the time, and now I'm like, where are the kids? This is so stupid. Where are they? Bring the kids.
No, let me ask you a question. All the kids are missing except Herschel,
yes.
right? Or am I wrong about
mm-hmm.
that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
There's something I'm confused about, but I don't want
to... The kids were taken away to...
The only part wanting to back was Herschel.
It makes no sense that Herschel was in this one... Like, why was Herschel in this one room? If you're trying to separate the kids from the... Like, I don't know. It just makes no sense to me, any of this. Like, yeah. So, anyway... I mean, it was okay writing-wise, and there was a little bit of excitement. I don't know. We saw, like, Daryl and Maggie and Carol and Connie sneaking into the Commonwealth through the sewers, which was pretty easy. Could they live there for 8 years and know their way around? So, I mean, it was, you know, it makes sense. I guess it bothers me that with two episodes to go, we had to spend this episode, like, moving people around and talking a lot and not really doing, you know, like,
you know,
I don't know.
And there's still a part that I got to ask you because I'm still confused about this part. And I don't know if it's just, like, I missed part of it or what, but I thought it was my understanding. We had this conversation, I think, last week that I thought the thing where Rosita got on the radio and was, like, talking to I can't think of her name, but that actress.
Oh, that's Nicole Brown.
Is where Connie was. So I don't understand. They're still at the Commonwealth now. I thought the whole big thing was they were going to Alexandria, and I missed something of what Alexandria.
They're at Outpost 22, which is Alexandria. They're there, remember? Like, Daryl helped save
Kelly.
Okay, so
the prison camp is Alexandria. That's what I'm not understanding, that I didn't
They were
get.
In, like,
okay.
a... They were in... You explained this to me last week. They were in, like, some temporary prison for, like, a night, and then
they
got taken...
See, that's what I think I missed, is that they apparently moved all the prisoners. I thought that they were just rescuing Connie from Outpost 22. That's why I got so confused in this episode.
They rescued
Connie
from the train.
I didn't understand what I said.
Connie was on
okay.
the train going someplace that nobody knows where she was going, and they rescued her from the train, right? And then they... See, look, we don't even know what the hell's going on, and you and I both watch it and think about it a lot.
Yeah. That makes sense, though. They moved the prisoners, I guess, and didn't explain that, or I don't know. You were supposed to pick up on that. It wasn't real clear.
It also is kind of dumb to me. So we have this whole other storyline we haven't talked about, which is Eugene's trial, which doesn't really need to be talked about because, like, we knew he was going to be found guilty.
I mean, that's
yeah, we knew he'd be found guilty, and then they'd have to try to figure out, like, how to save him or whatever. So all that happened, right? But... Like, if they want to take down Pamela, everybody has to come back to the like, they just went from the Commonwealth to Alexandria. Are they going to go back to the Commonwealth next week? Destroy Pamela and her hold on the country, basically, from Alexandria. You have to go to the Commonwealth and kill her, right?
Yeah.
And so is Yumiko and Mercer going to do that themselves? Or, like, is everybody coming, like... Like, I really don't want to see the last two episodes with the people split up, even though the people...
No,
the
I think
people
they're
who,
probably... Will
they're
going to
go back.
End up there.
They're going to... I mean, they just walked. They're just going to... Yeah. They're just going to drive back and forth from Virginia to Ohio all the time and pretend that it's not very far.
Yes. But they do that all the time. That's nothing new. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that being said, the stuff with Eugene, I agree. We knew he was going to be... you know, found guilty. I would have kind of liked to have seen Mercer go up on the stand. I get why he didn't. But as much as it wasn't, you know, necessary, I did kind of like the ending, like the way it was when he rescues Eugene. So at least everybody's kind of on the same page at this point. He's finally, you know, going to help them, which is a good thing.
Mercer, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say, the other thing I did want to mention, too, is that we didn't talk about is the fact that Rosita, after, I guess that's after Daryl stabs him, but anyway, that she fixed that zombie on the warden. That was a little violent.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't try to stop her. He just was kind of like, yeah, I'm not helping you. Go ahead. I don't know if she really thought she would, though. You know, she did.
Yeah.
Whether she thought it or not. But, but she wants her kid back, so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's getting towards an ending.
Yeah.
This is episode 22, so there are two more left. The finale, everybody is seeing at the same time because it's my understanding it was not on AMC. They're not putting it on AMC Plus until it airs, like it's going to be live. I believe so, yes. And there's like a whole finale event and everything. So they won't, people won't get to see it ahead. I'll tell you my prediction.
Get spoiled. Yeah.
I'll tell you my prediction. I think they're going to have Rick come in and that's why they don't want it spoiled. And I honestly have no idea. That's what I think. I think that they know that they can't keep it quiet. So, although to be fair, most of the time it's not kept quiet because they talk about it on Talking Dead. So, there's that. But I think that there's that might be part of why they're just doing it all at once, and which I kind of think would be better.
I was kind of thinking that, but then I read, so it was reported in a couple of outlets this week about, did you see the reports on the new Daryl Dixon series, which I think is just called Daryl Dixon? Does it have a name, or is it just called Daryl Dixon?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I didn't.
So they added a couple co-stars were announced this week. And one is Clemence Posey, who's from the Harry Potter Goblet of Fire. Fleur Delacour, she played Fleur Delacour. And the other actor who was announced, I forget his name. No, it's set in France, so she's French, right? The other guy is actually English. But it was reported, if this is true, that the way it begins is Daryl wakes up and somewhere in Europe and doesn't know where he is and doesn't, of course, only speaks English and has to figure out how he got there and what's going on and how he can get home.
Okay. See, I didn't read that. But I try to avoid spoilers. But,
Well, I didn't.
I don't know.
That's terrible. That's kind of dumb. I mean, it's obviously the CRM would have transported him to Europe for some reason. Who wakes up in France and is like, how did I get here, right?
Very true, but we don't know what happens at the end of the season. I'm assuming whatever happens leads into that. But, I don't know. I haven't really read about it, but I'm still not happy Carol's not in it. But, I mean,
well, she made her decision, right? She didn't want to move to France.
I've heard so many conflicting things. I'm just kind of like, I don't even want to know. You know what I mean? Like, what people do in that, some of it is kind of like their own business and, you know.
I read consistently only one thing about it, which is that Melissa McBride didn't want to move to France for months and months to shoot it.
The question I have is, didn't she know that, though, when she agreed to do it? But I guess originally it wasn't supposed to take place in France. I think they moved it or something.
I think she agreed to I think she agreed to before it was written. I'm sure she agreed to unnamed Daryl Carroll spinoff before it was, right? I mean,
right. I'm just saying, I would think they would have told her at the beginning if it was going to be in France. But it sounded like from the way it was hinted at, like last season, that it was going to be not, it didn't seem like it was going to be in France. So I don't know. Maybe things were changed. The point is, you know,
just
if she don't want to do
it,
it
in France,
her business, she don't want to do it. It just kind of stinks.
Just because you said it in France doesn't mean you have to shoot all of it in France. Right? Like
that
you can shoot exteriors in France for a month and then shoot the rest of it, you know, wherever.
Yes, she can.
I mean, it's set in Virginia and they shoot it in Georgia, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean,
No, you're Grand, right. You're right.
Like, but
I just don't know that. Like, I like Daryl and everything. I mean, Daryl's great. Love Daryl, and I love Norman. But I think that what made me interested in that show was that it was going to be the two of them. And
yes,
I think that
yes,
they kind of
yes.
Is my
yes.
point. So I'm kind of sad she's not. But I mean, I get that she's not. And if she don't want to, like I said, that's, you know, she has every right to not want to do it. I get that thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, as like a viewer. But I guess we'll find out. But all I know is everybody's watching a finale at once. They're not supplying it to, at least from my understanding, unless other journalists that are, you know, bigger sites, I don't know, maybe they'll get it. But as far as I know, they're not supplying it to the press. So everybody
all
will
right.
see it, you know, together.
Okay.
So
good.
All right. Well,
all right.
So
I guess that's it then.
I have an answer to your question.
Yes, AJ.
It was supposed to be stateside, and then Scott Gimple said, wait, what if we actually shoot it in France? I'm sure that's what happened.
Probably.
Scott Gimple destroys it all.
The smart thing would have been, well, let's see, half of our lead, the half of the important part of the show doesn't want to do it in France. Why don't we, like, not do that? You know, like, if I was Gimple, that would have been my decision. I would have been like, okay, then we
yeah.
need to go in France. But...
Okay, was a comment.
I mean, I can understand wanting to film it in France, but I would think that keeping that cast would have been more important. But we're not them, so.
Yeah.
Nope.
I would have thought a lot of things. Yeah.
It doesn't fix it, but who knows? Maybe she'll show up down the road. I mean, you don't know. With this show, you never know.
Well, you know, I liked your theory a couple weeks ago, Jamie, that Carol would stay to try to fix the Commonwealth.
I think that's what's going to happen. I mean, I have no clue, but that's kind of what I think. I hope they go that route and don't just kill her. I mean, I guess it's possible
they won't kill her.
Kill her, but I hope not.
They won't kill her.
I don't think they will.
Look,
because you know why, too, I don't think they will? I think that if they kill her, then fans lose hope that she will ever show up in the other show. Which is why I think they
yeah.
want to kill her.
Or
yeah, even
they
if she's
kill
not
her.
Going to be in the other show, they want people to think she might. It's like,
or when she decided not to move to France to shoot the Carol and Daryl show, Gimple's like, yeah, we'll see how she likes dying on this regular on the Prime show.
That's possible too.
Anyway,
but
what do you guys want to do next?
Find out in a couple weeks.
Interview. Let's do interview.
Interview? Okay.
All right. This is, oh, crap, I didn't even look that up. Which week is this? It's so
I don't know. It's the week that we're on.
This is week six. This is the sixth episode because next week, this coming one is the finale.
Finale, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So this episode is entirely about Lestat trying to, like, apologize to Louis and worm his way back into Louis's life. And being opposed by Claudia at every turn in hilarious fashion. It's pretty much
yeah.
the entirety of the episode, really. Not that much went on with Daniel in the interview, except they did explain a few things, I think, that AJ and I have been wondering about. So we've been doing a lot of talking. AJ, why don't you start us off on this one?
I liked it a lot. I really, really, actually, it's ironic because I enjoy the back and forth with Claudia and Lestat with what they're doing with it. There's a few things that I'm worried about, but I'm going to hold judgment until the finale. I don't like the fact, it's kind of, you know, it's yet to be seen, but I don't like the fact that Claudia is like, I'm going to kill Lestat, and I know you want to kill him too. And then Louis, with the voiceover, admits that he does want to kill Lestat. I'm not crazy about that simply because, you know, in the book, Claudia does what she does, and Louis is surprised at first, and then he's kind of
mm-hmm.
more into it. But I'm just hoping it's not a group effort that they try to kill him, in the finale, you know, the mid-season finale,
yeah.
or the whole season one, season one finale, yeah. I hope she's just, I hope he's like, you know, I hope when she does attempt it, that Louis's like, holy shit, I didn't actually think you'd do it, you know, as opposed to being in on it. Because, like, I've said this many times, you know, you can make an adaptation of something and you can change things up that work, but every fan of books that sees it come to life, there are iconic moments that we want to see, and when you fuck with our iconic moments, we turn on you. We don't like it. Ask the people in The Walking Dead. I have not watched since they fucked up the Glenn shit.
Yep. Yeah. And you just stopped. Yeah. They ruined that iconic moment from the book. Yeah.
Yeah. They tried to be slick and kind of sort of give Glenn his moment, but then they had to throw Abraham's dumbass in there.
So in the book, then, you're saying that it's only Claudia that does it? Is that what you're saying? Or you're saying it's the other way around?
Yes. No, it's just Claudia.
Okay.
Just Claudia.
Okay.
Like there's, like,
okay.
there's,
well,
like in the book, let's put it this way. In the book, Claudia just does it. She doesn't have a conversation with Louis about it. Louis has no clue that she's going to do this until it's already too late. So, but, you know.
Which would have a totally different ramification for their relationship in the show than if they do it together, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That's one reason why.
But, yeah. So, I actually, as a series as a whole, I had a thought.
Mm-hmm.
I've been, this whole thing about Daniel being older and this being 30 years later and the quote-unquote interview with the vampire book hasn't come out yet. This is the second interview. And, you know, that's really been bothering me as a whole because it's the setup for everything that comes after. And, yeah, some of the books take place in the past and some of, you know, but everything works its way to the present. And if you work your way to the present based off of this, it really hurts my head. But here is my thought. And I don't remember exactly what made me think of it. But I wonder if instead of, I don't know what their plans are, if they, like, season two of Interview with the Vampire and we come to the end of that book and then quote unquote season three is like a new show and they call it the Vampire Lestat. Here's my thought though. They continue to call the show for the next 20 years, Interview with the Vampire. What if instead of each thing taking, you know, each vampire getting the writer's bug, each season or, you know, each adaptation of each book, like, say, at the end of, you know, season three, Lestat tracks down Daniel and the Vampire Lestat book is the show Lestat telling his story to Daniel and the whole thing, like everybody comes to Daniel to continue the story.
So really turn the series of novels on its head and don't really do what the books are. Just make them all like an Interview with the Vampire.
Exactly. Because that could work. If that, and again, I don't know what made me have this thought. It happened while I was watching the episode. All of a sudden, I was like, you know, because like I said, it's been bothering me because of how things are. But that would work in the sense that it would bring it to the present and make sense, which would mean there's stuff that stuff that's happened to Louis since, you know, when they get to the end point of where Interview ends. There's other things that have happened to Louis, but we haven't, you know, learned those things yet. So, you know, in essence, Louis would actually come back to Daniel at some point, you know, and what so forth and whatnot, which I think would make it kind of interesting. But that's just a thought I'm having based on what we're getting here. As far as the episode itself, I really enjoyed the chess game. That was great, especially the way Claudia, like, Lestat knows he's beat, and she's like, I'm going to bed. I'm tired because, she knows Lestat –
Day.
Yeah, she knows that that is going to piss him off more than the fact that he lost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's really, really, I could really feel in this episode, like, I'm like, God, this is such an abusive marriage. I mean, this is like what happens, like your abuser, you know, injures you and then begs you to take him back and says it'll never happen again. He didn't really mean it and he's really guilty and here, I'm calling. Like, this is how abusive relationships go, right?
Right.
And he basically just wore Louis down eventually. And he kind of wore Claudia down, although to be fair, like it's sort of not, well, here's the thing. I was going to say it's sort of not Claudia's decision. It's Louis's decision to take him back. And if Claudia doesn't like it, she can just leave, except she can't, right? Like she tried, like he's an abusive parent. Also, and she tries
yeah,
to
cried.
Leave. She tries to leave and he prevents her from leaving. And it's really, you know, he says, oh, Louis would be so sad without you, so you have to stay. But that's not really why he did it, right?
No.
Like, he
control.
That's not really why. And cruelty. Like, he wants her to be unhappy. He wants to ruin her life. He wants to control her. And, yeah, he insists, like, he refuses to see her as a grown-up. He always refers to her as a child. He didn't even want to, like, say she's the cousin or she's the niece or the sister. She has to be the daughter. And he always calls her a child. He refuses to admit that she's now, like, 27 years old. Or mentally, she's, like, you know,
actually,
a grown person.
Actually, I think in the episode, Louis actually says something about her being 30.
30?
Yeah.
So 15 years have gone by. She was 15 when they bit her, right?
Yeah.
When Lestat bit her. So 50 years have gone by. She's 30. They even, like, they're toning down a little bit of her. I mean, I know, like, she's eternally an adolescent, and she will always have these, like, raging, like, mood swings and hormones or whatever. Although I feel that was toned down a lot in this episode. She, you know, she acts much more adult.
Well, she's much more self-controlled. Yes. Well, that's the thing. She might still have these emotions, but being that she has all these years of experience dealing with it, even though it keeps coming at her because of her physical form, she's mentally able to deal with it. You know.
Yeah, she wants to control herself a bit. Yeah.
But at the same time,
yeah,
you don't want to keep focusing on those things as you tell the story because then they just become
annoying.
Redundant.
Annoying.
Yeah. Annoying is a good word too.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
Lestat's
characters grow, like, as characters.
Yeah. But Lestat's, like, abusiveness, you know, it's real, like, you know, him coming back and begging, it's so clear. In this, and I think it's clearer to me now watching this than it was. I mean, I'm not sure if I just don't remember from the book or if because I was in high school when I read it, right? And, like, much younger and, you know, less experienced in life. Like, did I just not catch it as much, AJ? Am I just not remembering it? Or is it easier to see on the screen, maybe? I'm not really sure why I feel like it's much more, to me, much more obvious here than it was in the book.
I think it could be a little bit of both. I mean, I've read the first couple of books multiple times. And obviously I've read it more recent than you did if you read it in high school and haven't read it since. But I think it's a little bit of both. I think I almost actually feel like they've made him even more cruel in this series. I always had said they did that with a movie too, where Lestat was even more over the top. I think the problem, because in the book, while it's evident, it's the way Anne Rice wrote it, it's much more subtle, you know?
Mm-hmm.
In the book, there's a huge fight and everything, but he's much more, you know what it is? He's much more passive aggressive in the book. I think that's the best way to explain it.
Yeah.
So if you were to close your eyes and watch the episode and just listen to him, you might feel the same way reading the book, but seeing it is always going to produce a different feeling. So to answer your question, I'd say, yeah, I think seeing it is making you realize more of it.
That's what I thought. Yeah. So, Jamie, I know you watched this a while ago, probably.
A couple weeks. I don't think it was that long, but go ahead.
Okay. I want to, what stands out for you? Let's hear from Jamie.
I think he's very cruel. I can understand why Claudio, obviously wants to kill him, and she kind of, sees Louis keep forgiving him over and over again, and it's kind of frustrating for her,
mm-hmm.
because she sees it, but she's on the outside. I mean, a lot of times people, and I've never been in one, so I don't know, but I mean, people in abusive relationships, I think, don't always, I think he's aware of it, but not to the fullest extent. You know what I mean? You can always see it differently from the outside. And, she's kind of trying to get him out of that. I do like the whole thing, where at least he's not like where they're he's like buys him the car and everything else, and like you said, she's like and kind of keeps him away from him and at least at the beginning doesn't let him worm his way back in, but eventually she doesn't have a choice. I think he's really cool, and I think that maybe things would have gone differently if he had just let Claudia leave. I think that I'm not saying that the relationship should have been patched up because he is very abusive, but I think that if he had maybe let her leave and had made that confession, that things could have went differently. And obviously you guys, I'm assuming the big moments are going to be the same, so you have an idea what's coming. But I think that, in my opinion, because Claudia is the one that is kind of going after him in the first place for the most part, whether or not Louis helps, I won't tell you, but I think that it's kind of like what instigates it. You know what I mean? Like, if he had just let her go, it might have worked out a little better, I guess, is what I'm saying, without giving anything away. Does that make sense?
For me, making Claudia stay was almost like his greatest act of cruelty so far, in some ways, to me. Because he really does it just to punish her, I think, right? Like, it's not like he has a need. I don't think it's really a need to control her. It would be to just let her go. He really wants Louis. He does nothing but complain about her. He wants Louis all to himself. He never really wanted her from the start, right? He hates her. They don't get along. And then he forces her to stay, and he says it's for Louis, but, Louis said I could go, and he doesn't care. It's a great act of cruelty he does it really just to ruin her life. He threatens her. He's like, I'll kill you if you leave, right?
Right. And I guess my point is that if he had just let her leave, she would not have been so adamant about killing him and, trying to stop what he's doing. They could have. Like I said, it's not that he should be back with Louis. I'm not saying he should. It's still an abusive relationship. But I think that this is in my opinion, him doing that to Claudia is clearly the catalyst that starts, everything moving.
Well, I mean, everything you've both said is accurate with it. But there's also one other thing. Lestat's fear of Louis leaving. With Claudia there, Louis does not leave. With her gone.
That's true.
Even though for the moment Louis is content with staying Lestat, how long before Lestat pisses him off to the point where Louis just leaves? And if Claudia is there, Louis does not leave.
There's
it's all. I mean, it's, it's, the bottom line is it's all selfish nature of Lestat.
Yes. I'm curious once you guys see the next episode. There's certain things that Lestat does that I don't, like, surprises me, I guess. Let's just say, like, if his goal is to keep Louis there, some of the things he does kind of surprise me, and I'm you know, interested to talk to you guys about it.
We should table that until next week.
I'm just saying. I'm curious.
Were you surprised that he didn't kill, what's her name, his girlfriend? I want to say her name is Alexandra?
Antoinette.
Like, were you, Jamie, surprised that he didn't kill her when he promised he would?
Okay, I guess that was this one. I thought that was the next one. That was what I was talking about. Yeah. I'm surprised that if he loves Louis so much that one thing that was important to him, why he didn't just do it. But I guess that's the same thing as why not just let Claudia leave. You know what I mean? Like, I think a lot of it's about control. I think that he has to have his way. And,
absolutely.
He doesn't want to get in on anything. But it does kind
Let's
of surprise
put it this
me
way.
Because that was the one condition. Like, why couldn't he just do that? Why was it that big of a deal?
I'll tell you why. Because if Lestat got bored with her and decided to kill her, that would be fine. But they told him he had to. Lestat is a child. Lestat is an overgrown child.
He's a big baby.
You know,
he's a
baby. I mean, it's ironic actually, because Claudia was the teenager. Lestat is the eternal teenager. You know, like you tell a teenager don't do this. The more you tell them don't do it, obviously the more of what they're gonna do. We all did it. You know, but that is Lestat in a nutshell right there. You're not going to tell Lestat what he can and can't do because he's going to butt against it every single time. So telling him that's the one condition. You have to kill Antoinette or no deal. So, of course, there's no way he's going to do that because he was told to do it. Had he come to that conclusion on his own, it's fine and dandy.
Yeah.
It just seems
maybe
he doesn't. Like, I get what you're saying. I totally agree with that. But I guess, like, it makes it feel like to me that he's showing that he really doesn't. I mean, he thinks he loves Louis, but I don't think it's so much love as obsession more than love, you know? It's more he's my toy and I'm not letting him go more than I'm madly in love with him. And actually, I think now
to
you
degree.
Say that, thinking about it, I think that that act of not killing her actually is really, really telling. Just because of that. So.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to say what AJ said. You're both absolutely right. he's not going to do anything because you told him to do it. I mean, that's a huge reason why he doesn't kill Antoinette. It's because he's been told to do. And he is a big baby. And I think Jamie... Like, you're right. Like, all this, like, he can talk all he wants about how much he loves Louis, but it just isn't there on the script. Like, it just isn't there in his actions and his deeds. Like, he thinks buying you a Rolls Royce, like, he likes to have all these beautiful, like, Louis's beautiful and intelligent and, you know. Also, I think Lestat is really afraid of being alone, right? Like, he is alone. There are no other vampires around except Bruce shows up randomly and takes off, right? There are no other vampires around. We don't really know from the show. We don't know if there, like, how many other vampires are in the world and if any are around and why Lestat. I mean, Lestat says they're out there. He says they're out there. They're very dangerous. They'll kill you. You're too weak, all this, right? But we don't really know from the show why he shuns the company of other vampires, and yet he's desperate to have these other to have Louis be a vampire with him, right? Like he can't. He's terrified of being alone. He probably can't stand to be alone with himself because he's such a horrible person. He can't even be with himself, right?
Yeah.
No, that hits the nail right on the head. I mean, with what the show is, I mean, I know from the books, other books, why he doesn't want to be alone and what brought that on initially. But just in the world of the TV show, it's pretty apparent. We don't know why yet, but it's pretty apparent because he's done everything he can. And I think that's another reason to why he keeps Antoinette alive, because when Louis is shutting him out, Antoinette, she fawns over him, you know? Well, that's the most important thing in the world to her, you know?
Yeah.
So it's another layer of why. I mean, could he find another person that he tells who he really is and have them? Yeah, I'm sure there is. But he's already got her figured out, so, you know, it's the best of both worlds for him.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's totally compliant. She lets him – we saw her neck. She lets him feed on her. She worships him. Although he's also, like, she's, I don't know, like, I mean, she let him chop her finger off and put the, like, why did he chop off a why couldn't he chop off a random finger and stick her ring on it? Why'd it have to be her actual finger? I mean, I know why.
I wondered that myself.
Right? Like, I guess.
unless Louis or, unless one of them could smell that it wasn't her finger.
Maybe.
Their senses are pretty heightened.
Unless Louis just wanted to exert that level of control over her.
Was this before he turned her, though? Because it would have grown back, right?
Turned.
I was thinking she's not turned.
She's familiar.
She's
familiar.
Oh, not turned.
I guess just because I saw him drinking. You said he drank from her, right? Maybe that's why.
Yeah, she had the holes in her neck. He's drinking from her.
Okay,
yeah.
I assumed he turned her. That's why I was thinking, why not until he did that to cover her?
Yeah.
No,
you know what, though? As much as I'm enjoying this, we should move on. However, there is one more piece we have to talk about before we do move on, though.
Daniel.
Yes, that's where I was going. His fever dream, or whatever you want to call it, his flashback dream, how much of that's real and how much of that is just in his head? Like were we given a semblance of 30 years ago from his dream? Because, I mean, obviously at the end of the dream, it totally went sideways with, what's his face there showing up at the end of the dream, who obviously shouldn't be there.
Yeah, the guy who is the familiar, the guy who is Louis.
Yeah, his familiar.
Servant and familiar in Dubai shows up there in the 70, whenever it was, right? Whatever their
San
Francisco dream, yeah. I mean, he was obviously like taking a lot of drugs back then and whatever. I don't know. I mean, to me, it seemed like it was a straight flashback. This is how he met Louis until that guy showed up at the end.
Yeah.
Who is allegedly human. We know he's human because he's, well, we don't really know. I mean, we see Louis, that he lets Louis drink, right?
We see Louis feeding on him.
Didn't he drink?
Yeah, but in order for him to have been around then and not to be, the only way he could have that youth would be
if he was
a vampire. Had been changed, right?
Yeah, or if. Or a dream. We don't really know at this point.
It was a dream because we know we see him sleeping, then we see what he's dreaming about.
Yeah, we just don't know if it was a dream or a memory.
We just don't know how accurate it is to their actual meeting.
I mean, he was on drugs then, and they're giving him drugs for his illness, and who knows what they're really giving to him. And I guess. Okay, this makes no sense, but what I'm going to say makes no sense, but let me just finish my. Louis could be glamoring him to make him think he, I don't know, I don't think it's established in what we see on the screen that that he could put the glamour on him and make him think he sees a young man, but the man might actually be old. Let me finish. Wait, I was going to say let me finish because there would be no point to that, Jamie. I was going to say exactly what you just said, but why would he do that? Because there's no point to it.
Like,
right?
Why would he care whether he's old or young?
I don't know, unless they have some point for the story to make. So I don't. So my answer is, AJ, I don't know what we saw there.
Okay. I mean, I kind of figured since I don't know either, but
there was a really important scene also, and I'm interested kind of also in what Jamie wants to say about this, when Louis says, Daniel, if you asked me now, I'd give you the gift. And Daniel says, like, oh, well, now I'm old and whatever and blah, 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 and, like, I wouldn't ask for it. And I was like, okay, that answers a big kind of thing that AJ, you and I have been, like, wondering about. And I don't know, Jamie, if you caught that or wondered about that or anything.
I've kind of wondered, I mean, if he wanted it, because it sounded like he did at the beginning. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know that he would give it to him, but I also think maybe he offered it because he knows he doesn't want it now. Or not, he didn't exactly offer it, but what he said, I mean, because he knows that he wouldn't ask for it. I don't know.
Okay,
but
did you feel
that after he read, like, listened to this whole story, I don't know why you would want to be a vampire, but...
So to me, in that sentence, he's saying, Daniel, you asked me before, and I said no, and if you asked me this time, I'd say yes. Is that how you read that scene?
Yeah, that's how I read it. I thought you were asking me if I thought he wanted to be it now. Yes, I definitely, like, took it that way.
Okay.
But we haven't seen
AJ, you caught that also, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I don't really want to spoil anything. We might have already talked about this, though.
I don't know, but I'm kind of assuming if he talks to all these different vampires, he's going to have to be turned.
So I don't want to say too much about it, but I was glad they brought it up because it does happen in the book. They do have that conversation in the book about that. I mean, I won't give too much away about how it goes down, but I felt like, okay, at least they're acknowledging that conversation happened in the first set of interviews. The way this has been set up as a re-interview, you know, it's a little, it's different. And
it's
so,
like,
I was glad.
More or less,
I mean, I was glad to see they referenced this. I was glad to see they referenced this thing that happens in the book, that if they're kind of positioning this as everything that happened in the first set of interviews was not really true. But that does happen in the book, and I was glad to see them reference it because it's kind of a big deal.
Let me ask you a question you may think about. Okay.
Sure.
So we know that this is not, like I said, this isn't per se a retelling. It's just a sequel because he's hearing these stories again for the second time, because he did this interview.
Well,
does it actually make sense? Maybe, I don't know, thought about it, but, like, he makes a comment, I don't know, at some point, that Louis is, like, before lied, and is he telling the truth now, and how, you know, his stories about Lestat are colored differently, and that kind of thing. And it actually kind of makes me wonder and think about it. But you talk about how, like, in the book, it's, like, very much more subtle, right, their relationship and everything. Would it make sense, would it be possible, and I don't know, just kind of I'm curious, would it make sense if it was more like a sequel and, like, the stories that he heard the first time were that more subtle version of it? Because I don't know how he reacted to Lestat, I guess, in the book. You know what I'm saying? Like, the way he told the stories, I don't know if they were way different or if he actually looked at Lestat the same way, which is what they're implying he didn't, I guess, is what I'm saying, or at least Daniel did to me.
Let's put it this way. Yes,
yeah.
Yes, I understand exactly what you're asking. And let's put it this way. Daniel isn't as focused on in the book.
Okay.
You know, like, the book does float back and forth once in a while, but not the way the show does. Like, the book is mostly, hey, here's this guy Daniel, and he's interviewing a vampire, and then the vampire tells the story. And occasionally it would segue back to present time because Daniel would want clarification on something or an insight or something. You know, so it's more or less a straight through story as opposed to this back and forth conversation that we see on the screen.
That makes sense. But so everything, though, that Daniel's hearing, which I hadn't thought about till now, though, he's already heard this before. Or is it supposed to be that he's
in a manner of speaking, yes.
Yes. Yes. He's heard it, but it's, you know, he's hearing it again, and some of the details are different. But I think a lot of what Daniel's saying is, like, your attitude is totally different than the last. I mean, we haven't seen a conversation
yeah,
where he's like, wait, he never,
that he, sorry,
he never says things like, wait, she's 15. You told me she was 5. Claudia was 5. Now she's 15. Like, they're not saying that everything in the first book was a lie, right? Like, there is stuff that has changed. We're not seeing him. But
right.
Stuff that was more subtle is more obvious in this. And I guess he's saying that Louis's entire, like, the way he's characterized Lestat and their relationship is different. I mean, I think we've heard Daniel say a lot, like, well, you didn't, like, the degree to which they're in love, Louis and
yeah,
Lestat,
he seems
I think,
to. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I get this opinion that Daniel's saying you were still madly in love with him when you talked to me the first time. Well, maybe not madly in love with him, but I mean, he was still, like, I feel like Daniel's saying, you see now how abusive he was. You didn't seem to see that the first time. Is that accurate? That's how I take it anyway.
No. Daniel, no, I think Daniel's more like, you purposely, like, gave me a different, like, not that Daniel's like, oh, now you see he was abusive and you didn't see it before. I think Daniel's like, wait a minute, you didn't tell
you
me the
it.
Truth before. Like,
because
yeah,
you weren't
like you,
accepting of the truth. Yeah.
Did you have an agenda then,
not,
or do you have an agenda now?
That's true. Okay. That makes more sense.
It's kind of how I see where that's all coming from.
Yeah.
All right. All right. We got to move on.
Let's move on from this.
Yeah.
Okay. Next up?
Okay. Well, not the finale, so.
Peripheral or... Manifest or Quantum?
We still have that many. You want to do Quantum?
Okay, let's do Quantum.
We can do Quantum.
I don't know.
That's quicker.
That was kind of quick. Yeah.
Okay.
I thought this one was pretty good. I like how he figured out instead of it wasn't just about saving them and that they were able to save, well, essentially save all the kids that were at that place and change what happened.
Yeah. Although, you know, I mean, that is kind of the way the show goes. Like, there's always this, like, they think they know what the calling is, and that the calling, the leap is.
I know what you mean.
And then it turns out to be more than they thought, right? Like, oh, you're not just here to save their marriage. You're here to save them from being killed in the earthquake. You're not just here to help him win this fight. You're here to help him reconcile his brother. Like, there's always a little more to
it. Well, you know what it,
through, right?
You know what it always, it kind of is there is what the leap is, you know, like, all right, the earthquake one, he was there to save the son, but because of who Ben is and his personality and what he tries to do, he kind of makes other things happen that weren't necessarily intended type of thing. This one was kind of more obscure because they didn't have a lot of information other than the kids were quote unquote found dead in the woods because of, you know, a school hike that went bad, which clearly there was more to it. So I kind of like the ones where they don't have as much information because then it kind of, you have these things where you got to actually figure shit out. I mean, us, the viewer, I think it's pretty obvious what kind of school that was as soon as we see them escape. You know?
Yeah.
The one thing that it drives me nuts, and it actually, the original used to drive me nuts too, because Sam was just as bad sometimes, but I hate how sloppy, Ben got really sloppy in this episode talking to Addison. Like,
himself,
you know, you're talking to somebody, you're a different, you're not Ben, you're somebody else, and these people are seeing you constantly just blurt out in front of multiple people talking to Addison like they don't fucking hear you talking to her. At least
yeah,
with this.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm thinking this poor kid. They think that this kid has
But they had some fun with this one because
they
made this whole thing about, you know, having an imaginary girlfriend. So it was kind of, they made this one fun, but there's been times in kids, I guess it's easier to get away with it, but he's done this in front of adults, you know, and something that's always driven me nuts, because even Sam back in the original, he would do that sometimes. And I was like, what is wrong with you? I did have one issue with the episode. I overall enjoyed the leap. One thing that bothered me was when they were in the cabin and they got found and they're hiding on the side of the house, why not take the van and leave? They left it running.
Obviously,
they didn't do it that way because of how, you know, so that the story could end the way it ended, but don't give us an opportunity like that and make the kids look stupid, because the kids have been pretty smart the whole episode. You know, it reminds me of a commercial. It's a Geico commercial. It's a horror
spoof.
The horror spoof one where they're like, let's get in the running car and get out of here. No, let's hide behind the chainsaws.
Yeah. Jamie and I were just talking about that.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
We just had a text conversation about that the other day.
Yeah.
But, you know,
it's
a TV show. They make dumb mistakes.
Obviously.
They should have just hid the van or whatever. But I like the way they did
that. And then, of course,
I kind of find it surprising, though, that the kids couldn't find the cabin. And he found it so easy because he found the pipe that told him water was there, but the cabin was like, all he did was turn his head and there was the cabin. Like, he didn't really have to find the pipe to find the cabin. That was the only thing that was kind of like a little contrived, I guess.
Yeah, a little bit.
Was right there, yeah.
And then, you know, of course, we get the bit, you know, on the 2020 side, well, actually it was still in the Ben time, but we get the big mid-season finale of I Leapt to Save You, Addison. Dun, dun, dun. Credits.
And not in January, gee.
Is that what it's back in January?
Yeah, it's a January 2nd. Because I was really surprised.
Oh. Wow. I am too.
Well, you know what, I think that I can kind of understand, because they were originally given 12, and then they were given 6 more, so there's now 18, which means they probably, they have more filming to do, so.
Yeah. They had to write and film, plus there's other stuff on the schedule, like maybe they don't want to just dump everything, you know? So there's that, wow. There was all that. I mean, so I was a little, so they have this whole bit of, who's the woman who's like the, who's, that woman who works in the office who's a little cold and a little, and she was trapped in the elevator.
Jen.
What was her name?
Jen.
Is her name Jen? I can't remember Jen. Jesus. It's like the easiest name ever. Half the people in my high school class were named Jen. Like, there was a lot of character development on her in this episode, which, I mean, I shouldn't complain about character development, but I was like, wow, there, like, you know, there's a lot of back at the lab stuff going on that, I don't know, like, to me, we've talked a lot about how is there too much of it and is it all strictly necessary? And I was like, is that really necessary that, like, we have to have a whole thing about her daddy issues? That kind of was, I don't know, surprising to me, and I could have done without it, maybe. Not that I didn't like it. I just don't care about it.
That's fair.
I don't know, unless her dad's going to show up and be a problem, right?
I mean, I think it's good that they flesh out the characters, but I get what you're saying. Like, we didn't necessarily need it because it wasn't really important.
Yeah. With this perk to be going on when we still have all this. But, you know, on the other hand, I guess if the mystery was unraveling too quickly, like, how are we going to the show would move too fast, and so they have to maybe slow stuff down a little by having other stuff happen. So.
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
one thing they've been doing the last two episodes is they're making Janet, you know, even though Janet did drug her mother, they're making her look less and less evil each the last 2 weeks.
Yeah. She's looking like she has a point. And like, the only thing is like, why Ben, like, she's looking less and less evil and more like an ally. But then why wouldn't Ben tell? Then why did Ben keep it a secret? Is still, that's kind of
well,
still out there,
that's
right?
The thing. Maybe, well, we kind of sort of maybe got that answer because whatever he's doing, it has to do with Addison. Now, the only thing I can think of is the other leaper, like maybe she dies in the future and it has something to do with the other leaper, which is why he's trying to leap to the future to stop that event from happening, maybe.
This
is just obviously speculation on my part because of it. I mean, even from the beginning, even after Janice drugged her mother and let her fall to the floor, which if you wanted to make, like she could have drugged her without letting her fall to the floor. You could have drugged her and helped, seen her falling, caught her and just gently put her on the couch instead of like leaving her on the floor. But anyway, I've been biased about Janice the whole time because I can't picture Al Calavici's daughter being the bad guy. I just can't. Anyway.
It's good to see that moving along and not just being dragged out.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Anything else with that?
All right.
We'll move on to peripheral or manifest.
Peripheral.
Yeah, let's do peripheral.
Okay.
All right. So Jamie, this is the one.
I was gonna say this is the one where they find out what's kind of happening in the future, right?
I don't know what you mean by find out about the future, but Connor, this is the one where Connor takes a spin in her body in the future.
Yes, I like
a
that. I like
spin
how he got
to kick him out. Yeah.
The walk for a little bit. I thought that was nice. But yeah, isn't this the one though where they take her to the sort of museum type thing? At least they say it's a museum.
Yeah.
It's a little bit. With the crazy shit in the air, find out what's happened in the future. That's what I said.
Oh, yes. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. I didn't understand what you meant at first by the crazy shit in the air, but then it came back to me.
To find out why, 6 billion people died. Why almost
a lot of people are dead
died.
And everything. Yeah.
A lot of people. Like, all except, only 1 billion people survived, right? 6 billion people died. Almost the whole world died,
They talk about, part of it was from the big pandemic, And you think about, when they have shows where they do pandemics and they do it because, people got inspired, by what's happening now. And it's no, this is from William Gibson. This happened a long time ago. I thought that was kind of interesting. Assuming that part's in the book.
Yeah.
And I haven't read the book, so I don't know, but I assume it is. But yeah, I think the other thing that I think is really, before we get to the end of people and everything, the other thing I think is really important this episode is conversation. And I like that scene between Lev and Charisse, I guess it's her name.
Charisse.
The nasty lady.
Yeah.
How they're kind of, that they obviously don't like each other and they're fighting, but they can't outright fight. But I like how she's saying, I killed somebody with DNA. And then she swiped his mug or whatever it was she took from him. That was funny. I like that.
Well, I thought that was kind of you had to really follow it closely, but they kind of explained to us who everybody is and who they're working for. And that, there's three organizations that run the world, and one is the Kleps, who, I assume that's short for kleptocracy, and they're really organized crime, pretty much, right? And then there's the Research Institute, and then there's the government, I guess, is the third leg of that stool, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I got out of it. It does. I think that whole conversation is very important. It is hard to follow, but I think it's important. And also, you find out in this episode that he killed all his stuff. Like, that kind of, to me, like, makes him, I don't know, like, shows he's not all there and he's a little unhinged. Because these people that he's killing are, like, I know that it splits off into, like, alternate realities, but they're kind of like him, you know, in the past.
Like, he killed his entire family in the...
Yeah.
He kills all his doppelgangers.
Well,
right.
No, he said
that,
no,
like,
no.
He doesn't change the past and screw himself up.
I think they're the only ones he killed. I think he said, if I ever find any more, I'll do it again. I don't think he said he has done it again.
Right.
He will do it again, right?
Well, there was something about, found an article about his family being killed or something. So he at least killed family members and some of his, some versions.
He killed his, this is the only stub they've ever, like, interfered in. He's saying he did it in this stub. And if he ever goes into another stub, works in another stub, he'll do it again. I'm pretty sure this is the first time he's killed all of his, but
I
that he,
think
that
he's
said
done
he
before,
would do it again.
We don't really know how many there are or if there's more. I just might have taken it that way. And it's also been a while since I've seen it, but thought that was
It's possible I took it. We took it two different ways. We'll see. It's a throwaway thing anyway, right? It's just to demonstrate how ruthless he is. It's not really probably relevant.
Well, let me ask you guys a question, and this is not connected to that. I just was thinking about it because we had this discussion last week. Haven't you by now seen the thing where they walk through the city and he, like, shows her what it really looks like?
No.
You have not. Okay. Okay, never mind then. You know what I'm talking about, so don't listen to what I said. Okay.
But I think we kind of know that it's all that.
We already heard what you said.
Well, but you don't know what I'm talking about. The scene I'm talking about.
No, I don't know what you're talking about. But you said,
You
said don't listen to what I said.
No, I know. I said don't listen. But what I said, no. I mean, you know that it's not all what it seems. I'm just saying there's like a scene that explains some things a bit. I thought it was in earlier. But and this one has the Will flashback too, right? Which is the other thing that we find out more about.
Oh, when they get caught.
Yeah.
Well, flashback. What are you talking about?
I'm looking at
flashback.
This recap.
With him and
Will flash with him and Alita when they're young.
Yeah, and that
other
kid. Oh,
when they first get captured, when they first get what they call
when
reclaimed,
on the bus.
When they first get reclaimed, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, when they're on the bus and then they make a, have the image look like a fake, look like a fake Blue Cross food drive or some shit. And...
Yeah. I mean, what's really clear from that is that without Alita, Wilf would have probably been dead, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, I get that's like the aftermath of the war or the apocalypse or whatever we're calling this thing, right? The jackpot, they call it. And they're living on the street in this really horrible, and for some reason, someone's going around collecting, snatching kids, I guess, because they need to repopulate or I don't know why. But without, like, the other kids were bullying him and we're going to throw him out. But Alita, like, stands up to them multiple times, and that's really the only reason. He, like, owes a lot to her. Like, I can kind of, like, you can see now why he stayed with this family who clearly didn't want him, and they clearly still don't want him and are very abusive and jerky to him now, right? And he puts up with them, and, like, it's for Alita. He can't, like, live without her.
Right.
I really did not like the scene where Wilf dances with Lev's wife. I thought that was
weird,
boring, and unnecessary.
Yeah, that was creepy.
It was creepy. It was creepy to me.
What was creepier, though? What's creepier, though? Her trying to impose that type of power over him or Lev watching?
That's true.
There's a lot that's not clear to me that, like I guess it's racism, but there also seems to be some kind of
than racism, but.
Well, I mean, but when he was introduced, when he's brought out to be adopted, they say his genetics include German and North African, which like, I mean, he's black.
Yeah.
Right. want him from the start, and it's because like I feel like if a little white boy was brought out, they might have. Not, you know, like they make a point of saying that. And I just, these people like all treat him really badly. There's a part of me that feels like is the surviving world like super racist, except Charisse is a very powerful person, right?
Yeah.
And she's black.
Yeah. I feel like they look down on him because he wasn't like it is. See, I feel like part of it was like a class thing, but you're right. They said that because he was black, that's why they looked down on him as being like a lower class type of thing.
Well, I don't know why, but Alita was brought in off the street also. So Alita's not, it's not like Alita is some kind of high class girl that they adopted.
No, you're right. It's,
like they found her on the street also.
Yeah, no, you're right.
So I don't really know why people, like, no one in the whole show is nice to him. Like, they're all using him for whatever. I don't understand anything about, like, why he hangs out with these people, how he came, like, why he wouldn't get the hell away from them.
He doesn't hang out with these people. He works for Lev.
Yeah, I don't think
it's not like they're hanging out having tea parties and shit. He works for him. I mean,
job? Like he comes from a very, like,
working for him because of Alita. Like, he thinks that it can bring him closer to finding her. That's how I took it.
Alita, yeah. Exactly. Jamie's right, too. I mean, that's part of it.
That why?
Yeah.
Like, his very mean mother is like, we gave you everything. Like, except they probably wouldn't give him any money. I don't know, but, like,
give him an education.
I mean, the whole thing is, it's very uncomfortable. Every time I see him interact with anyone, it's very uncomfortable.
Oh, I think
yeah,
it's
I
supposed
think
to be.
His family, but I think he's working for Lev because he thinks it'll help him, that he can help him find, that he can help him find her. I don't think it's
and
that
it's
he
also
likes her, he's friends.
Yeah, and it's also implied that you know, I'm sure we'll find out more, but it's also implied that Wilf is trying a new path to be a little kinder and gentler, and that maybe his history is not so kind and gentle. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think in the flashback, I think we're going to see a much more brutal Wilf at some point in the flashbacks or something. Because it's even said, like, when we first meet Lev, he kind of makes a comment, like, what's the Asian chick, I can't remember her name. She said something like to Lev, like, why do you keep him around? And you know, and he says, you know, he kind of says to Wilf, he's like, oh, because we know what he's really capable of. We remember a time when he, you know, used to not be so nice or something along those lines. I'm paraphrasing.
Oh,
but.
No. Oh,
yeah.
Huh.
He says
so. Okay. So we also have all the stuff that happens with Flynn. And I felt like it was about time, like I was waiting for, I was kind of wondering, like, how come Burton never says, like, let me get in and try it? And I was sort of waiting for this to happen, that this is the episode where all the guys are starting to be like, they want to try it. Like, Connor's the first one to get in, but they're, you know, later Burton has a conversation with his, I don't know what that guy's name is, his friend, who's like, don't you want to try it? And that's the cousin. I was kind of, I was waiting for that. Like, that made sense to me. I was glad to see it. Because, of course, that was going to happen, right?
Yeah, well, of course he's going to try to do that. Why wouldn't he?
And you know what else I like about it, the whole futuristic part of the storyline and everything, is I like that there's consequences to this. Like, she's having some serious mental shit, and her hand keeps tightening up. You know, I like the fact that it's not just a device used to get us to the point to tell the story. Like, it's creating its own story because it is experimental, you know, and it's not mm-hmm. perfect, and it's giving her some serious side effects. You know. So
and
I like that aspect of it. Yeah.
Other people maybe less so. I love every time. Go ahead. Sorry.
I was just gonna say, obviously Lev doesn't care about her or, you know, pretty much anybody, it doesn't seem like. He just cares about the bottom line is how she can help him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and Lev and his right hand woman there, the Asian woman whose name we can't remember, with the Scottish accent.
The one from Harry Potter. Is that who you're talking about?
Is she from Harry Potter?
Yeah, that's Cho Chang.
That's Cho Chang.
Looks different.
Well, like, she also doesn't care. Like, I love that every time Flynn comes into their world, she's like, wait, do you keep me in a box when I'm not here? And then the next week she's like, wait a minute, do you make me play with the kids when I'm not here?
Am I a toy?
And they're like, well, we need an extra person. Like, they totally treat her like a robot. Wilf is the only person who doesn't treat her like a robot, right?
Yeah.
Like a peripheral.
I mean,
like,
not for nothing. To be fair, when she's in the peripheral,
she is a robot.
I mean, when it's her, it's her. But when it's not her, I mean, why not make use of her? I mean, you know what I mean? Like,
I agree.
Well, and yeah, it is a robot, and really, why not keep her in a box? It's funny because Wilf says, I thought you'd keep her in a bed or something. And Lev is like, why? Of course I keep her in a box. And, I mean, he's not wrong. Sure, keep your robot in a box. I guess I just love that Flynn, like, really considers it to be her.
Yeah.
It looks like her. It was purposely made to look like her.
Obviously.
She's not in another person's body, really. Like, it doesn't look like someone else. I find it hilarious. Every time she goes in there, there's, like, another indignity, right? She's like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
In
the next episode, mm-hmm. she's going to say, you know, I had a thought, who dresses my robot?
Yeah, right.
That's a good question.
Because it's not really a robot. You know, when they see all those dead ones and someone, I guess it's Wilf says, when they go in that medical room, it's in the previous episode, and there's a bunch of dead robots in there. And Wilf says, oh, they were kept here too long without their nutritional.
Yeah, it's like a biological,
whatever.
Like an empty clone body or something. I feel like it's more like, I mean, it's a robot, but it seems like it's biological, that it's, you know, alive in some sense.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I'm not sure you would make an extra bedroom for your empty shell or whatever.
Yeah,
well, I could understand.
Yeah,
but it's
So I guess that's all the major stuff that happened. I mean, they did have that cop come snooping around. Like shit is starting to they might have to worry about dying in 10 years because they might get killed right there in their own town by who knows who, right? I know that, having a cop come snoop around it's dangerous for their cop. His name is Johnny, Jimmy, Timmy, I don't know. It's dangerous for him to be snooping around. Like, they don't want him to get, you know, killed or whatever.
Oh,
but
you mean
him.
That's what you meant in the future. Was you were losing me.
Oh,
yeah,
Tommy.
Yeah.
Tommy.
I knew.
Tommy's got to play some kind of part, because otherwise, why do you even have the character around?
Yes. Yes, you're right. And it's not just that they don't want it to happen to him because, you know, as Burton says, there's a dozen bodies in the backyard and we can't have a cop snooping around here.
Yeah.
He's not, you know, he's not overreacting. He's not wrong about that.
No, he's not.
Yeah. So, yeah, I hadn't really thought about what part he plays, but he's definitely going to play a part because why else is he in it? So, anyhow, is that all that really happened this week? All
right. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much it in a nutshell.
All right.
We should keep moving along. So that leaves us with Manifest.
Okay.
Yep.
We watched the first two episodes of Manifest.
Yeah. Now, you're going to have to remind me which is specific to the two episodes. Although, I mean, they've all been.
Okay.
So it's not like if I say anything, it matters, but.
So,
all right, I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you how the second episode ends with finding out about Jared and Drea, which I kind of saw coming. So that's how it ends. So hopefully that helps you remember what came before.
That's not exactly a plot point, but
I think that's huge. I think that's huge because also in the
relationship, not plot.
Because also in this episode, I mean, it's plot. Also in this episode, Michaela admits to Zeke that she still has feelings for Jared. Which is huge.
Kind of
big, yeah.
Which is kind of sort of messed up in a way because it's been 2 years since we last saw our Manifest crew.
It has, but I remember when they got married, we had the conversation, do you think she's only marrying him because he's going to die? Like, we talked about that.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, Jared ends up saying that he only stood up for them because he thought Zeke was going to die. I mean, we did talk about that. I kind of felt like they brushed it under the rug. I mean, I know that this is not a show that is going to get really deep into, you know, the drama of their relationship, but I felt like Zeke kind of let it go. Like, he has that moment where someone says to him, you can love two people at once, you know, when he ends up telling, you know, he's telling Ben, like, loving Cal doesn't make you love Eden any less. And then he goes to Michael and says, you have a big heart and you have room for a lot of people in there. And I'm like, no, she's still in love with her ex-boyfriend. That's totally different, Zeke, dummy. But the other thing that happened, Jamie, the second episode was all about the guy who comes over from China. And it ends with his tattoo being transferred onto Cal.
All right. Well, I think he still has the tattoo. I think it just showed up on Cal. I don't think it
disappeared. All right, well, we don't know because he's gone and probably will never be seen again. But whatever. I mean, it's transferred.
They found the black box then.
Yes, they found the black box. San V has been religiously trying to figure out what's going on with the black box. Henry says, do you hear the voices? There's voices over voices, and they're like, what the hell are you talking about, Henry? And then she calls in her friend, and he explains to her how UHF works. And then she finally, after playing with all the different frequencies, she finally starts to hear it. But we don't actually, I couldn't make out anything that was being said.
Oh, I could because I put on the closed captioning and we played it. And it was all voices of like Cal and Michaela and like, I think maybe Zeke, definitely Ben. And they were all saying stuff that it's not like they were on the plane saying stuff. It seemed to me to be like all snippets of stuff they've said over the years, like, which of all the callings, and this is how it has to be, and it was not like anything like, it wasn't anything like, I see the angel of death. It was just sort of like, you know, generic manifesty kind of stuff to be saying.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
It wasn't like a general
thing. You know what it reminded me of? Trying to figure out the whispers.
Yeah, you play that over and over and lost.
Yeah, at least this wasn't backwards.
That made it fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. But she could see it on the caption.
So there was no angels of death, but there was a volcano.
Okay.
A volcano.
It's hard for me to
afraid. I'm just being careful what I say. I'm thinking about it.
I all right, well, then don't say anything. So the action is moving around, but I feel like, I guess maybe because it's still so early in the season, that, you know, a lot of these two episodes, I felt like was designed to just make you want to punch Ben in the face really hard. Like,
well, that's
Ben,
how we always
total,
felt.
I know, we always hated him. Well, not as much as we hated Grace. We always felt that Ben was a pain in the ass who needed a punch. But he really is like, I mean, 2 years later, he looks like he hasn't taken a shower for the whole 2 years, actually. And, and that he, like, so I could maybe see a bit of a storyline of, like, blaming Cal, but not really. Like, we see the flashback where Olive, like, really screams at him, it's your fault. But she's clearly gotten past it. Like, Olive is
gotten
not
over
like
it,
that.
Yeah.
Right? And Cal is, like, so neglectful. Like, I can totally see how, like, okay, his one daughter's missing, but it's like his other two kids don't exist and don't matter. And he's like, I don't want to live anymore. I don't care about the lifeboat. I don't care about it to gestate.
Oh, my God.
Nothing means anything without Grace and Eden. Poor me, poor me. And I was like, oh, my God. Cal, just punch him in the face right now. Right?
When he mentioned the lifeboat, Artie goes, oh, no, not again.
yeah, we thought that was over.
And it's actually, once they mentioned the first lifeboat, the first time, and actually Cal said lifeboat the first time, and I was like, I started making jokes. I said, I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe they named the kid Eden. Clearly, the kid's name should be Lifeboat.
Yeah.
Look up and see Greek names or whatever, you know, different languages that was Lifeboat, name of that. That'd be funny.
I mean, you know, it's like, we know Ben's right, but it's like, it's just like the way he goes about things. And everybody in the episode, at least once, I think, has been like, dude, you need to let the rest of your family know that you're still here for them, like, especially Cal. And what really pissed me off was after Anna confessed and they come home and everybody knows that, you know, that she's out there somewhere and they just got to find her now. And he comes, everybody hugs, the whole family hugs. And there's Cal standing on the other side of the table and Ben's just like glaring at him. Like, I thought finally this is the moment that Ben is going to go over and hug his son. And nothing. And I was like, oh, my God, Ben. I was like, I wanted to punch him. I mean,
I know. Also, because how many times has Cal been kidnapped or ran off and disappeared or blooped? Like, half the show is always like, where's Cal? Poor Cal. We got to find Cal.
Yeah.
Like, half the show is like, for years, has been like, where's Cal? And now, like, Cal is...
Stay in the house, Carl.
yeah, right. And now Cal has like been like hates Cal, which it's really not Cal's fault. I mean, we kept saying he shouldn't have let her in the house, let Angelina in the house, right?
Yeah.
But he didn't make.
But he was
Angelina
a little kid
killer.
I think
no,
actually,
I mean,
think
he,
if I remember correct,
he wasn't
if
like
I remember correctly,
Jamie, he was like 12.
No, yeah, 12. Yeah.
He was old enough.
If I remember correctly, though. If I remember correctly, though, I do recall quite a few times on this podcast hearing the phrase, Cal's the worst. Now, who was it that said that?
Who could have possibly said that? Who might have said Cal was the worst?
I got to say I'm liking the teenage Cal. I'm liking this actor. I think he's doing, I mean, it's only been two episodes that I've seen, but I think he's doing a good job. Really capturing the regret that Cal has. Because obviously Cal blames himself too. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, aging him,
I don't know, seemed like a kooky idea, but it does allow you to do more with the character also, right?
Yeah.
Like, Cal can go sneak around the port of, you know, down in the Port Authority on the docks and not look totally, like, he can look like a young guy working there and not look like a 12-year-old sneaking around the Port Authority. And he can, you know, like, it does give him some more to do. I do kind of wish Cal would be a little more forthcoming. Like, Cal says things like he said, you know, I rewatched the season finale, of course, right before I watched this, right, the last season finale. And, you know, he's on the plane, and he's crying, and he says, this is how it has to be. And then he bloops, and he goes, and he's with Grace when she dies, and he says, it's okay, Mom, I know now what we have to do. He said, that's the last thing he says in the season three finale, right? And like, did he forget immediately as soon as she, like, if you know now what we have to do.
No, the writers did.
Yeah. I mean, he said, I know now what we have to do, and then he hasn't said anything about it. So did he know? Did he not know? Did he, like what does that mean? I'm not asking you.
Said you have to put in this cryptic line, and he didn't really want to.
Yeah, I mean, I know you don't know what it means, but, like, Cal knows everything, and yet he never knows anything, or he never tells anybody anything, right? Like,
yeah,
why?
I'm not sure what it,
like,
it's referring to, and I've seen the whole season, and I'm, like, thinking, wait, what? I have no clue.
You know what's really interesting?
I don't remember the finale. I might just not remember, but...
Yeah.
You know what's interesting about Cal right now is... So, Cal is... All right, so... When he was on the, all right, so originally they were 12, right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they were 12.
So they were
they
were like 12, and then Cal lost 5 years, so he's still 12, and then a couple years go by, so, you know, he's like 13 by the time season three ended, and now he's 18, and... you know, back to the age he should be, yet he still lost those 5 years. So it's like, now we look at Cal as a young man, but he's still mentally a little child in a way, because he doesn't have the experience of actually being a teenager.
Right. I think that's interesting.
Granted, it's been 2 years since, you know, he's been a teenager for 2 years now, but it's still like he doesn't, you know, and it's actually funny. There's a little quick line where I forget what the question was, or somebody said something, and he's like, I missed high school, remember?
Yeah, I caught that too.
So it was like, there's that moment. So it's like, it's an interesting dynamic with Cal, which is what I kind of like, and I feel like the actor is doing a good job of kind of, Cal's kind of like got to live in both worlds. Like, there's a mental part of him, but then there's a physical part of him, you know, and it's like, I feel like because him and Olive are technically now the same age again, they're not looking at him the same. I mean, hell, would you have let 12-year-old Cal would never have been able to walk into the police station, you know, and do, you know, or as he put it, I feel like I'm walking into the Death Star.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a great line, you know. So there's that aspect, you know, you don't let 12-year-old Cal do that, but you let this Cal do it because you're looking at him as a young adult now, even though his mentality is still that of, like, maybe like a 14 or 15-year-old, you know?
Yeah. That's a good point. I hadn't really thought of that, but he missed, like, he's the opposite of Claudia the Vampire, who looks young, but is 30. He looks 18, but
yeah,
is, like,
exactly.
14. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. It is the opposite.
That's really interesting. I hadn't thought about that.
Angelina is another person who needs to be punched in the face, and Adrian. These characters are horrible. They're horrible people. Anna, all of them. I mean, if you... Okay, so Anna's excuse for harboring fugitive Angelina and Eden all these years is because he said bad things. She said Ben was, like, abusive or whatever, right? Like...
Was this supposed to actually be all 2 years, though? I didn't get... Maybe she was the senior 2 years, but I kind of thought...
Okay, whatever, whatever. Just because he was a bad person, you don't get to kill the mother and kidnap the kid. Like, you should still call the police, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, in what world is she better... Like, okay, you don't want the kid to be returned to Ben because he's allegedly abusive, but you want her to be with murderous Angelina? Like, it's mentioned, like, there's a character who mentions that they saw it on the news, that it was all over the news when it happened. It's not like she doesn't know that Angelina killed Grace, right?
Right.
So,
you know what's funny about it is?
Yeah.
Is Anna's like, she's like, oh, I'm so sorry. She's like, you know, Angelina told me that you and Grace were awful and the baby was unsafe and she saved the baby from the fire because, you know, and blah, 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 blah. She goes, but after spending one day with you, I realized she lied. And it's ironic because she spent the day with Crazy Ben.
Right? Yeah. She did. She did it with Crazy Ben, who was acting all like, he was like not at all acting like a stable person that I'd want to give a child to, right? Yeah, that was kind of weak. That was kind of, I mean, I understand they are going to have to rush this show to the end because of the cancellation and the one season or whatever, but, like, that was just, like, that makes no sense that a person would do that and say things like that. But it's Manifest. It's not the deepest show that we watch. And then Adrian continues to be the worst also, right? Like, Adrian's like, okay.
Adrian.
It's like, she's like, you told me to do it. And he's like, I didn't tell you to do any of that. And she's like, yes, you did. And he's like, okay. Okay, you can come stay in my house. I also have to say, I hoped when they got to Netflix, they'd have a larger budget so they could afford a better wig. But no, they just used the same wig that they had on her last year, which, I'm sorry, Holly Taylor should... That can't be Holly Taylor's hair. That is a wig, right?
Well, I think it's intentionally bad, though, because it falls in line with the character. She's trying to hide out. You know what I mean?
No, her hair looks like that last year. That's the same wig from last year. That's the same hair from last year.
Maybe I'm forgetting. Oh, you just watched the episode, so I guess you would know. But I was
just
thinking that,
watched the season
that,
finale.
That, right. Okay, see, I don't remember her hair looking like that last year. I thought it was longer.
Yeah. Might have been longer,
so I figured
but
she was
had
wearing...
the same, like, it sat on her head the same way. I just feel like, Holly Taylor, if that's your real hair, then you just need to fire the stylist.
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean, I mean, it is the same production.
Yeah.
It was so funny.
Throughout the episode, I couldn't remember the character's name at first. Angelina was just, like, failing me. So I kept referring to her as Holly, and finally, after I said it the third time, Artie goes, "Who the hell is Holly?" I was like, "Her." He goes, "That's Angelina." I said, "Thank you." I said, "Holly's her real name."
That's a Jamie. Yeah, it's like a Jamieism. Like after Jamie meets them on the interview, sometimes she calls them by their real names, right?
Yeah, I can always remember. Their character
one other thing, I like what they've done with Zeke, that he's got that he's helping people, he's using his powers to really help people. I think that's really a good use of Zeke's character with his empathic abilities.
I'm surprised that Zeke doesn't also have to check, like, so the A2Aters are on this watch list and they have to check in all the time and answer all these questions and basically have this really intrusive thing going on with the government. But, like, I'm surprised that, like, husbands and wives don't have to check in also, that people who are related to them. Like, if I, like, Stacey, if you were like on a terrorist watch list, they'd be watching Alyssa also, right? Like I don't know.
Probably.
It's a little.
No, you have a good point. I hadn't really thought about it.
Whether they have callings or not.
That
because
Zeke
they
can
take
go
them,
around
they
with.
Find other.
What, Jamie?
I said I think a lot of it is more about whether they're having callings or not, though, because I know like she has to lie about having callings through a lot of it. So I think that they get scared of them when they know they're having callings. Not that that's a reason they should, but
yeah.
Well,
maybe like, has
really
your wife had any callings this week? Have you noticed your wife acting weird? Has anything weird happened this week? Right? Like,
yeah.
Like why would they not be? Why? I don't know. Because it's manifest, and I can't pull these threads. Right? Don't pull these threads. It's just
right.
Manifest. But yeah, so I agree with you, AJ. I like that he's using his power for good. Although it reminded me, so when in the first scene where he's with his drug counseling client, and he gets this guy to open up, he uses his powers to get. I mean, he's using his powers for good, but it's a little manipulative because he's not saying like they don't know that he's basically reading their mind, right? And he gets this guy, you know. They hug, and then, like, the receptionist says, wow, how'd you do that? Like, the last guy almost quit. How'd you get that guy to do that? And Will says, I feel their pain, and then they do the hard work, right? And so then fast forward to the scene where Henry Kim is, like, his heartbeat is racing, and he's, like, coughing and can't breathe or whatever. And he's like, Sandy,
right.
Let me try. And he holds his hand on the guy, and then he goes outside, and he's coughing and everything. And you know what that reminded me of? The Green Mile.
Yeah. I hadn't thought
of
that, but yeah.
It reminded me of
Mile.
Like a
Have you seen The Green Mile, Jamie?
Yeah. It's been forever, but yeah. But this,
okay, you know how...
Yeah, I mean, it's...
You know how John Coffey, when he, like, takes in the evil or the illness out of someone, then later it flies out of his mouth like black ashes are flying out of his mouth, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like...
Yeah.
That's kind of what Zeke's doing. Like he's taking, is he like taking their pain and their,
I think he's
like he's not just using
the way you feel.
He's not just using his powers to understand your feelings and then draw you out to talk about it. He's actually like literally kind of drawing them out. Right. And
you take the emotions from them as well as you like make them feel things. You can kind of take it.
So that's not going to go well for Zeke probably, right? I can see that, like, are we going to have a Zeke is dying thing again? Because that could happen. And I also feel like there's a consent issue. Like, he's not, like, obviously he can't tell them, but he's not telling people that he's going to basically read their mind, read their feelings, you know. I mean, it's one thing when he's, like, acting like Deanna Troi, like, you know, he's walking around with Jared and McKellen is using his powers to help them stop a crime or, you know, be an advisor. But when he's there in the room with you, counseling you and not, like, I don't know, I felt like there was an element of it that was kind of not cool.
I hadn't really thought about it that way, but I guess you're right.
There's that element where Michaela last season had to ask him to, like, stop reading my mind, and he's like, I can't help it, right? Like... Reading a person's mind without their consent is not cool, right?
Right.
Anyway, I think the bigger issue is that it's going to make him sick. Like, when he took that guy's, like, physical symptoms of anxiety from him, then Zeke was sick. So, I would have another whole season of Zeke dying because, like, we've been there and done that. But, anyway.
All right. Anything else? Or can we say goodnight to Jamie and move on to the last two?
I think we can do that. Jamie, you got anything else you want to add?
No, I was trying to think if there's anything else. I don't think so. I was going to say soon we'll have Wakanda to talk about, but not quite yet.
That comes out next week, right?
Yeah.
The 11th,
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah.
We'll have that soon.
I've got to work this weekend. I'll try to catch it.
I think everything else I've... scene is not out, so I don't think there's really anything to talk about. I don't know.
Okay.
I need sleep. That's all I got.
All right.
I can say one thing. I've seen Warrior Nun. I have to put up Simon Barry interview.
I never even heard of that.
Oh, you never seen the first season? It's a good show.
It's a comic book adaptation,
but in the TV series version, they have like a halo. It's supposed to be like a halo that is sort of embedded in their back under their skin, and it like gives them powers. Whoever has it, the Wernan. And when the one girl, when she's dying, she has to hide it, and she hides it in a dead body, and the girl comes back to life. And that's what it's about, because she's the one that becomes a warrior nun. But it's kind of like a, it's interesting, but it's about like a group of nuns that, you know, protect the church and everything. But I don't know, it's good. I like it. It's sci-fi okay. too. But yeah, season two just came out. Hopefully there'll be a season three. But I mean, it didn't come out yet. It's coming out. I just watched it, I should say. Yeah.
Okay.
That's cool. Yeah, and it's Simon Barry, you know, Continuum. So.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, right. Yeah, good. Good stuff. All right. All I can say is to keep a look for the different interviews that are still on the way. I still have more manifests, and, you know, Leverage is on the way, and one of your Dangerous Liaisons yet. And so, yeah,
cool.
All that stuff. All right. Well, talk to you guys later.
Okay.
Have a good week.
Have a good week, Jamie.
Bye-bye.
You too. Good night, Jamie.
Go get some
Bye.
Sleep.
Good night. Hello. Good night.
Good night. All right,
American Horror Story.
Andor.
Oh, Andor.
Let's blast through Andor first.
Okay.
I gotta say, I feel like it's getting a little more interesting. Bix is tortured. I don't know what that device is or what it does, but holy crap, she was screaming for her life, and she actually gave up information.
Yeah.
So, Vel and Mon Mothma are related. I'm confused on how, though. The driver says it's her cousin, but when she gets there, her daughter says, look what Auntie Vel brought. So I don't know if it's one of those situations where you just call relatives auntie and uncle, whether they are or aren't.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's like they say that it's her cousin, but it's really her sister type of thing, or what the...
Maybe she said she was cousin when she showed up because she didn't want.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
To draw
I mean, it doesn't really matter.
The important
thing is Vel is turning out to be a lot more important than we thought she was. I like when Mon Mothma says to her, when she tells her, she goes, you need to act like a spoiled rich kid for a minute so people don't get suspicious.
Yeah, that was funny. I didn't see that coming, because why would anybody see that coming,
right?
No way anybody would see that coming. I really thought maybe we wouldn't see Vel anymore, that part of the show kind of was over. I thought this was a better episode also. I thought it was getting better. Maybe partly because, like, Cass Andor was only, like, a third of it, and, like, two-thirds of it was, like, Imperial intrigue, which of course, and Rebel, like the stuff that we, like, I don't know, like we talked about how this is a show that didn't be made. This is a show, but I feel like this is stuff that I didn't know I wanted to know. Like all this Empire stuff and how, like, this fills in a gap in a much better way than like
the mirror stuff is really good.
Yeah,
but I gotta say even the prison place, you know, and Andor's storyline actually picked up a little this week. I thought it was pretty crazy that they found out that when you get released, you don't get released, you just get switched to another section.
Right. That was huge.
Like,
right?
It's a total scam. And then the fact that you know, then the guards killed everybody because word got out. Like, you have this slave labor to mass produce whatever it is the Empire needs, but if somebody figures out what you're up to, you kill a whole wing of people. you just killed your production. Like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
And
well,
I have a theory.
Because
I really want to know what the hell they're building. Like, I'm watching them build these things, and I'm like, okay, what is this Lego that they're building? You know? And then I was like, oh, wouldn't that be cool if it turns out these are, like, components for the Death Star?
Yeah. Well, that'd
like,
be cool
that'd be
because
cool.
This takes place 5 years before Rogue One, and Rogue One takes place really just a few days before A New Hope, right?
Right.
So that'd be cool if they were Death Star parts. I like that theory, AJ. Yeah, so, yeah, the stuff inside the prison is heating up, and that was an amazing turn of events there, how nobody gets out. I mean, I think that it just shows kind of what Cass has been saying all along, that they have unlimited slaves, they don't really care about you, and they'll just kill you all because they have, like, unlimited prisoners, and they just, like, I mean, honestly, with those new laws that they rolled out, they probably don't have enough prisons to put all the prisoners in, right?
No.
And they can get a whole bunch more there. Also, when they landed on that planet, there were, like, multiple little buildings. Anyway.
Yeah.
But
it's just, and this is exactly what they wanted to happen by doing the heist, because now the Empire is putting their boot to everybody's throat, which they're hoping is going to piss off enough people to really start a real rebellion. You know, it's kind of ironic and shitty at the same time, you know, like basically like you're getting people hurt, but the end result is fighting back. So it's one of those goods of the many outweigh the needs of the few, I guess, type situation. Oh, and did you catch who the loan shark is? When she's talking, when Mon Mothma's talking to her accountant friend there, and he's talking about needing the $400,000 or whatever, and they're talking about
the
loan shark.
His name.
And, Draven.
Remind me who Draven is.
As in General Draven in Rogue One.
Oh, Draven. It's Draven, General Draven.
Yep.
Wow.
Which I was suspecting that, you know, we're gonna be getting little things like that. Like, and actually something I learned in this episode that I had no idea about, I didn't catch it, but one of the guys, the guy that was most featured in the episode when Andor was, talking about escape and everything, the guy that was kind of like, agreeing with Andor, he's also a Rogue One. He's one of the pilots.
I totally recognized him, and I was trying to figure out who he was. I'm like, oh, God, I know who that guy is. I recognize his face.
Yeah, he's one of the pilots that volunteers to go to whatever the planet was called. I can't remember the name of it.
I recognize him enough to the point that I'm like, oh, are they maybe going to escape together?
Yeah.
I'm like, who is that guy? He's a bigger actor. He's going to maybe he'll escape with them, but like now he definitely has to, because if he's going to
join the rebellion,
if he eventually isn't going to the rebellion, that totally makes sense to me. I mean, I do think one reason that I thought this episode was better and that I enjoyed the prison scenes more is really partly because Cass. It was really the story of the Andy Serkis character getting to where he needed to get, right? Like, it was really his in this episode.
And I love the way that ends with Andor's been questioning him the whole time, and Andy Serkis has been like, whatever, I'm going to bed now, good night, I'm not answering your questions. And then as soon as the old guy dies and they realize that nobody ever gets out of there, he's like, how many guards per level? He's like, no more than 12. Like, he immediately, switched his tune.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he immediately was like, all right, I'm telling. He has, 200 and some days left, and he's been totally, out for himself. And now they're at the point where he has to realize. And so they have no choice but to escape, because you just stay there till the rest of your life. You're never getting out. until you die. Like, and like Andy Serkis, I can't remember his character's name right now, but he's he's a big believer. Like, he believes in this. He really believes in the system, and like he believes, like, keep your head down, do your work, don't get in trouble, and just do your time until you get out. He believes it or he believes it because he has to believe it or he'll go insane, right? And he's at the point now where he realizes that he's believing a lie and God is something different. But you could see him go through that. Like, as we're going through the scene where Ulf is dying and they're learning from the med tech, the truth, you can, like, see it. I mean, this is why they cast a great actor like Andy Serkis, right? You can, like, see on his face, like, what he's going through as it's, like, dawning on him in those scenes.
Yeah.
Like, as he's realizing. Yeah. And you can see, like, on his face, like, his brain, like, the gears clicking in his brain and doing the work, and it's, like, coming to him and he's figuring it out, and like, just the, like, disbelief and then the disappointment and, like, all of that he's got to go through to come to that realization was so great. Really great in that scene, I thought. I don't often really.
All right. Well, hopefully it keeps getting better.
Yeah, it's definitely getting better. I'm really, I guess there was a point where you and I would have said it couldn't have gotten worse, right? So the only way was up for a while. It was so boring.
Yeah, true.
So, all right.
Very true.
Yeah.
All right. So AHS.
Moving right along.
I this last episode definitely turned everything on its ear, so maybe that's why I seem to enjoy it more. But we had weird tarot card stuff happening where people are having hallucinations after a tarot card reading, which makes no sense whatsoever. Big Daddy tries to kill Patrick, but then Gino sees Big Daddy in the mirror as Barb is getting killed. He somehow shows up behind her in the shower as she's fantasizing about Patrick. So you've got to be right. You've got to be right that he's supernatural. You know, your theory about him being supernatural, even though we've seen him physically do stuff, there still has to be a supernatural element to her, because there is no way for him to show up behind her in the shower.
Yeah. Yeah.
So got to be supernatural. You know, there's just too much going on there. And then everything in the next episode totally got flipped on its ear when you find out that, first of all, Whiteley, when he has those two gay guys tied up, of course, everybody knows.
Oh, my God.
But I love when he drops his creation down, and all I could think was, what is this, Frankenstein's Jesus?
Right.
he's got this living doll, like, you know, crucified.
Is he living? I think it's a corpse. I don't think he's living.
Well, I don't mean living. All right, so yeah, living was probably the wrong. Yeah, probably shouldn't have said living, but you know what I meant. And then the big twist that Patrick and Sam know each other, and they accidentally killed some kid when they were all having sex with him. You know, which was an accident.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you gotta be careful when you put a bag over somebody's head, though. But then you find out Henry's a hitman who brings Whiteley in to chop him up. I'm like, holy!
Oh, yeah.
Like, at first when he said, he's like, I got a guy and he's bringing him in, I'm thinking it's gonna be Big Daddy, and I see Whiteley and I'm like, okay, that actually makes more sense. And you know, now you know Henry's at the mercy of Whiteley, but Gino's hot on the trail, and I don't know I don't know, maybe because it was lots of action and go, 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 and lots of twists and turns. But I feel like this entire season has been things for the sake of things. Like, there's been no real, if anything, I like Patrick even less now. Sam, I mean,
and I never liked
Sam
him that much.
I think I like him less now. Sam is your stereotypical, you know, 80s gay guy in the club, in the disco club scene, where, you know, he's got, you know, he's got the button down shirt with the chest hair showing and the medallion, you know. I mean, don't let me, you're getting me wrong though. He nails it. He is nailing that character. And you're not supposed to like that character. But then honestly, he actually comes off a little sympathetic in that flashback and in the scene leading up to it. Well, just because like he seems, or for me at least, he seemed more humanized in that moment. Like when they first get to the house and he's like, oh God, he's like, I miss this place so much. And I'm like, he's not the overbearing and asshole that he usually is. And even in the scene when, you know, when they realize he actually had to push Patrick off of him and stop Patrick. He's like, Patrick, stop. And Patrick's going to town and he pushes Patrick off. And he's like, oh my God, He's like, holy shit. He's like, we got to call the cops. And Patrick's like, I am the cops. We can't call them. You know, it's like Sam actually wants to do the right thing. And then he's
Sam
like, all right, hold on. I got a guy.
Yeah. Sam wanting to call the cops was kind of surprising to me because he's a terrible
person.
That's
what I'm saying. Like, yeah, don't get me wrong. I mean, Sam's still a terrible person, but it kind of, they made him a little less, like, you know, just an inkling less terrible.
Yeah.
And made Patrick worse.
Yeah. I mean, he wanted to call the cops, but he did pull his Patrick thing where he says he consented to this. You know, he wanted it, he consented. And Patrick says he didn't consent to this. And, like, Patrick does have a very loose consent. He consented, but he never actually told the kid what was going to happen, right? And it reminded me of when, you know, he had that kid locked up in the cage in his sex dungeon. And and he's like, you consented. And the kid's like, let me go. And he's like, you answered the phone outside the bar. What do you think was going to happen here? And I'm like, Sam, that's not really consent, right?
Different. But you know what, though? But it's actually kind of funny now because seeing this scene makes me wonder what they didn't show us with the kid in the cage.
Yeah.
I feel like we didn't see everything.
Yeah. No, we didn't. So this takes place 2 or 3 years early, 2 years earlier or something like that, right? Or I don't know.
Yeah, 2 years.
But I guess I just felt I could see the later Sam with people in a cage, like where he's like his first reaction is like he consented. And I guess, yes, part of that is a defense mechanism. Like, I didn't mean to kill him, which they didn't mean to kill him. But, yeah. And, you
it's
know.
Still
it's like,
still involuntary manslaughter.
Yeah, and Patrick sets the whole scene up by saying they were heavily on drugs when it all happened. Like in the previous scene, Sam's like, why do we bury a body here? You know, it was the drugs. It's probably the drugs, Sam says.
It's always the drugs.
Yeah. It is a little, I get it that it's an ensemble show and we can't, like, like, if they dropped new characters in the middle, we might be irritated. But I'm like, in all of Manhattan, like, it's the same five people who are turning out to, like, oh, you know, Sam. Oh, they killed someone. Oh, right? Like, and what's his name? Andy Adam is Billy Ward's sperm donor.
Oh, Adam.
That was a little out of the blue. It hasn't really been established that they were such close friends that they would enter into that relationship, but whatever. So I thought episode 5, the first one, I was a little bit like, this is kind of boring and what's the point of this? And it was like a whole episode that was just to set up this tarot stuff, which was, you know, at least they brought into a supernatural element finally. 6 was better and sort of pulled it all together for me a little bit better.
See, while I agree with that, at the same time, I feel like, I mean, this has been 11 years, and you run out of ideas eventually to a point.
Yeah.
I mean, you're in a certain niche that you gotta produce, and like we said earlier, oh, every year, you know, like nothing you've ever seen. Well, yeah, it's like nothing you've ever seen because it's a whole new story. But I feel like this year he's kind of pulling things and throwing them at us. It's been very it hasn't been I can't think of the first word I'm looking for, but it hasn't been reactive so much as it feels more telegraphed than reactive. Telegraphed mm-hmm. isn't quite the right word either, but I think it kind of gets my point across.
This huge
twist of bringing everybody together in this last episode like that. Like I kind of like the twist that Henry is a hitman. You know, that's kind of just a fun little thing, regardless of any of the story. But then have it turn out that he's been working with the Mai Tai killer this whole time, and that, you know, and just, you know, Sam and Patrick, and just bringing, you know, everybody together, and then Gino, but, you know, it's like every character in this season is connected without even knowing it. You know, all the main characters. Kind of like having Adam and the Doctor be friends without even knowing it, without us knowing it until they, you know.
Yeah.
So.
I mean,
I don't hate it. It's not the worst season. I don't hate it. I just feel like, me personally, I feel like the characters here after six episodes, the characters aren't as strong, I feel, as they need to be for me to even care about them.
Well, Gino and Patrick are both really unlikable. And, like, Gino's whole, like, jealous lover routine is a little old. I mean, granted, Patrick was actually lying to him, but not about the stuff Gino thought, right? Like, Gino always is like, I fell in love with your wife. Are you sleeping with someone else? Are you this? Are you that? Like, Gino's, like, suspicious and needy. And, I mean, for the guy who's supposed to be the older gay man, the older person, and more experienced and out, and he's like trying to coach Patrick through coming out and leaving his wife and all that. He's very pushy. He's very needy. He's really unlikable, but Patrick is not likable either. There's been something about him from the start that I found unlikable, right? I mean, like I should feel sympathetic towards this guy who's trying to live this double life, and he can't be out at his job in the NYPD. And
he's not sympathetic at all.
No, because he's just like kind of a jerk. I don't really and then I like him less every episode, that he turns out to be more and more of a liar, and now it turns out like he killed somebody and buried him at Sand Dune. Well, and
you know what's really funny is the scenes with him and his ex-wife, I really felt for him, you know, like, wow, he's like really sweet and sincere with her. Like their scenes are really, you know, nice. But the more I learn about Patrick, the more I'm like, is he though, or is he just placating her?
Yeah.
Because of what I've seen with him everywhere else, like Gino says to him, and it was a couple episodes ago, and it's really the epitome of Patrick is, you only tell the truth when you're about to get caught.
Yeah.
And that kind of sums him up right there. And that, you
it
know,
really does.
That's kind of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
It still really feels to me like it's just a normal serial killer show and not that good a one.
Yeah.
Like it's very Law and Order, not Law and Order, but it's very procedural feeling. It's not that different or unique a serial killer. So, you know, his speech about when he lowered his creation from the ceiling, to me that had a very Silence of the Lambs kind of thing to it, right?
Yeah.
And he gives this speech about how, I don't know, he's killing gay people and making a Frankenstein that he's going to reveal at the Pride Parade to show the city that they're hypocrites. And, like, probably like a farce because these people are so unloved that they can be killed and nobody cares kind of thing, right? Something like that is his reasoning, which is kind of convoluted, but I guess,
his message is the problem. It's the way he's going about it.
It feels like a straight-up serial killer movie and not that great a one. And then, like, the whole Big Daddy thing glommed in there, like, so so
well, it's funny because we actually start with Big Daddy, And then it turns out that we got the Mai Tai killer too.
Yeah. And Big Daddy's kind of going nowhere. And Big Daddy doesn't really, so he looks creepy and scary, but is Leslie Grossman the first person he's actually killed? He might have killed Adam's friend in the park.
He set the fire.
He set the fire. Yeah, he set the fire. He firebombed that place to kill all those people. But he did it when Gino was in there, right? Gino and Adam.
No, it was Adam. There. Was Gino there, too? I know Adam was there. I don't think Gino was there, though, was he?
Well,
no, it was
Gino's
just Adam. Adam and... Yeah, no, it was Adam and his
Artist.
Boyfriend.
His boyfriend, yeah, Adam's boyfriend, went there. But Adam was handing out flyers for his missing boyfriend, right? So
for his missing friend,
Missing Big Daddy, so let's assume Big Daddy is supernatural, but who does he want to kill and why? Like he set the fire and he killed Leslie Grossman, but like, why did he kill her? Like,
but
what was her problem? Why would he kill her more people? First of all, I don't know why she was fantasizing about Patrick when I think
she's still in love with him.
I know, but he's like gay. Like, once you know your husband is gay and you find all that bondage stuff in his closet,
I mean, just because you find out your husband's gay and you're getting divorced doesn't mean that you automatically fall out of love with the person because they're still the same person.
She actually suggested they should stay married in, like, a sexless marriage, right? Like,
yeah.
She's like, let's just stay married. Yeah.
Exactly.
And she actually had a seizure and fainted then, right? Which I don't know what that, like...
Yeah, that's right.
Was that supernatural? Was Big Daddy sending her bad vibes?
Yeah, I don't know
what
the deal with that was.
Right?
I don't know, but
Big
we got,
Daddy,
like, 2 minutes left, so...
All right. I don't know what's up with him. It's confusing, and the whole tarot thing, and yes, like, yeah. We got a serial killer story with extra stuff. So I guess we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, we got 4 episodes left, so 2 weeks to talk about it.
Okay.
All right. Well a quick short. Thank you for listening, everybody. We really pushed it to the edge this week, and we'll try and keep it a little more compact next week.
Okay.
All right. Have a great week, Karen. And
thanks,
I'll talk to you later.
Have a good week. All right. Bye.
Thank you, America and beyond. Good night.